This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
Because I believe now we are joined by Jonathan Howcroft. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good evening to you both.
Hi, Jonathan. It's Louise. And Nick and I are just having a bit of a chat about some of the latest news. Of course, the new A-League team, Western United, have announced a triple signing today with three promising young players, Dylan Pariah, Seb Pasquale, and also Apostolos Stamatopoulos. It's great to see them getting new players in rather than recycling old talent, isn't it?
Yeah, hugely exciting. Seb Pasquale, in particular, is in that handful of most exciting young players that Australia's produced for a number of years. So fantastic to see him in the A-League and presumably getting a significant role. He's had a great grounding in his time in Europe. He was obviously a phenomenon at Victory before he left. So super excited to see him. And like you say, this idea that there could be three or four younger players who the fans of the club could actually attach themselves to for a number of years. And I was having a conversation just recently with somebody about comparing Victory and City and how City have never had that Lee Broxham kind of a character who fans can just quietly see going about their business over a number of years, who can really represent who they are on the pitch. And I think that's one of the challenges of any new club in that process of establishing what their identity is, what the characteristics that make that club in the future. And these are the young players who will have the opportunity to set that. And hopefully kids, it sounds pejorative, doesn't it? But younger players like Pasquale and Stamatopoulos can have a number of years playing for the same team, learning their craft and actually setting the template for what the club is for years to come.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic, in particular, as you said, because as like the likes of Pasquale probably has probably the most scope for potential, considering he spent that time at Ajax. Do you think with Pasquale as well, considering he's very similar path to what Tom Degg did, taking that time away, obviously going over to Ajax, how much do you think that would go in terms of growing him as a player? Because we saw, obviously, how good of a youth system Ajax have. How much will that help him when he makes that return back to the A-League?
You can only think that it would be an enormous advantage just for the quality of education that he would have received. The big question mark is that step from youth and reserve grade football to senior men's, because you can have all the talent in the world. You need to apply it in that environment. And it's part of that broader conversation that we're having in Australian football at the moment, isn't it? You know, what's the balance between a centralised model and the devolved club academy system? How do we get more opportunities to get these kids onto the pitch? When do they get there? It's interesting that Dylan Pieris is in this conversation as well, because, of course, he debuted so young for Melbourne City. And we've not really seen him very much since. So how do we bridge that gap and turn these promising young players into seasoned full men's footballers? And you know, I think we're seeing the value of an extra club in the competition. That there will be more game time for these kids.
Well, that's exactly right. And I think that's I'm not a professional A-League coach, but from my perspective, that's one of the reasons and ways that you can really do that is just throw the kids in the deep end and start them and play them. And obviously that gives them an opportunity to build on their performances week in, week out by giving them those A-League minutes.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's the one of the conversations that I've brought up on a number of, you know, a number of times on the show. What's the point of the A-League? And for me, I think there has to be a development component. I think we have to acknowledge that the A-League is part of the Socceroos ecosystem. It's part of converting promising young players into international footballers, and we all benefit. The game as a whole benefits as a consequence if that operates effectively. Now, on an individual level, there will be challenges along the way. Seb Pasquale, as an example, At the stage, even in his career, when he had the opportunity to move to Europe, it made sense for him to take it. I think what we have to make sure is that the environment is as robust as possible to keep producing as many of those players as we can and making sure that there's first-team opportunities for the ones that want to stay in Australia.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think that there's also been, in the same discussion, there's also been a bit of criticism recently towards Graham Arnold and the fact that he's taken a number of these young players out of the A-League clubs due to Ollie Roux's duty and wanting to get them in ahead of their AFC preparation and also Olympic qualifiers. What do you make of the whole discussion, Jonathan? Do you think, are you sitting on the side of the A-League clubs that the players should be staying there, or are you more in favour of, you know, them going off and representing their country?
I'm going to sit on the fence, I'm afraid. I don't actually have a strong opinion because I don't really have much skin in either game. But what I'd say would be a bit of a repeat of what I said earlier. I just think we need to be clear about that balance of responsibility as a football community. How important is the Ollie Roux to Australian football? How much investment do we want to put in it? Is that more important than a league club winning 3 points on a weekend, or what's the balance within that? I don't think anybody's been overly dramatic in this. It's not like one team's lost 10 players and Graham Arnold stuck two fingers up at the other rally coaches. So, what's the right mix? What's the right balance within the game for prioritizing age group international and domestic club? It's one that we just want, you know, the people in positions of responsibility to be having and discussing openly, and so that when these kind of situations happen, it's not, you know, we're not in a case where coaches are sniping at each other in the press, or if they are, it's from a baseline of, okay, this is what, as a community, we expect. And if it doesn't meet those expectations, then fine, say something about it. But let's be clear about what we want to get out of it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that it's such a double-edged sword. I mean, Graham Arnold's been in both positions now. One where last season he was saying that the A-League isn't a developmental league. And, you know, he didn't actually even include any young players in his squad, let alone rotate his starting 11. And now he's like, well, we need to develop our players, you know, so they're ready for the national team. So it's like such a double-edged sword as to where you stick,
totally.
Where you sit.
Yeah, and you look at the template that he set with Sydney FC and making them so successful. It's not a million miles away from what Tony Popovich has done at Perth Glory this season as well. You win domestic competitions with a high average age in your squad and not much of a focus on youth development. Yet there's still there's still the NYL, there's still a youth development framework, but somehow we need to have a robust conversation about where they meet and how they interact with each other. I don't really have, like I said, I don't really have a strong opinion. And when I find myself, you know, being asked or veering into this territory, part of me feels like under 23s is too old anyway. The conversation actually should be at a much younger age group. And how do we fast track those players that are under 20? And be figuring out what the best way of getting them into the professional game is. I do feel a little bit that if we're arguing about 21 to 23 year olds within around the margins, maybe we're missing the point a little bit.
Mm. Yeah, no doubt that more investment should be aimed towards those younger age groups. But Jonathan, there was another big story this week. I'm sure you've been well across it. Football Federation Australia have thrown their support behind AFC President Sheikh Salman and his re-election, saying he's actually the best credentialed candidate for the role, when ironically the incumbent actually chose to do nothing to help free footballer Hakeem Al-Arabi.
Yeah, well, if he's the best credentialed, then nobody is credentialed to do it. Shut it down and start from scratch. It's just a reflection of the appalling state of politics around full stop, and in particular, the state of politics in football. It's disgusting. The PFA have very eloquently put forward the arguments why. And it just shows how little confidence we can have in the global football order. It's just a mess. You look at what's happened with the World Cup bids. You look at all of the corruption that was happening under FIFA 1.0 that doesn't appear to be enormously different under Gianni Infantino and FIFA 2.0, and how football is used as a political tool by people who we don't want to associate with, and let alone we don't want to be talking up as credentialed people, because they're people that you don't want to do business with. But the FFA will argue that they're backed into a corner. They have to back somebody. They're part of a regional bloc, and that's the position of the regional bloc. And part of it is just backing the winner. You know, you read the tea leaves, you figure out who's going to win, and then you find a way to satisfy your ethics to come up with the right way of saying that was who we wanted all along, because that's where the grants are going to come from. That's where the political support is going to come from for things like the 2023 Women's World Cup bid. So, it's just horrible. It's just an unfortunate consequence of how we've evolved as a collection of societies, that it is the kind of people like that have taken on positions of responsibility, and our options are either support them or put ourselves out as an outlier in the global football community and suffer the consequences.
Jonathan, would you say this is almost a slap in the face of people like, obviously, Hakeem, Craig Foster, and even the PFA, who worked so hard to obviously free Hakeem, obviously, all those weeks ago?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a demonstrably look at, you know, we're going to talk a good game, but in reality, these are the decisions that we're going to take. And again, putting, you know, trying to look at it from their perspective, they would argue that they don't really have much of a choice. What would the alternative look like for them? And take a step even further back from that and try and figure out, okay, well, how do we embed ourselves further in Asian football so that we have a bigger voice in that conversation, or that it might have been Australian going for that position from a position of strength, but we're not. You know, that's just the reality of where we are. But yeah, absolutely. You look at everything that went on and that very public, very visible conversation for a number of weeks to see everything that happened so acutely from an Australian perspective, and then say what they've said about one of the individuals responsible. I mean, you just shake your head.
Obvious, absolutely, and it's a terrible ordeal, obviously, that's still going, and you still obviously can't believe it. It's absolutely baffling that the FFA would almost put their support behind someone like that. But just moving on quickly, obviously we heard the news that Marco Kurz won't be coaching Adelaide United next season. There's been a lot of talk about foreign coaches, and in particular, I was doing a bit of research and realised there was only about two or three foreign coaches that have actually won the A-League down here. And it got me thinking about how foreign coaches perform in the A-League. And I'm looking at some of them that are performing this year with very negative mindsets in the way they play their teams. In particular, Kurz and Warren Joyce come to mind. Does that change perception on how foreign coaches are viewed here in the A-League in comparison to some of the local coaches who have performed at a greater level?
It's a good question. I'm not sure necessarily. I think we have to take each of them as individual cases. I mean, clearly, Warren Joyce's remit at Melbourne City has been very specific. I feel like what Marco Kurz has done at Adelaide has had a lot of merit about it. They've just missed one or two pieces of the jigsaw. He has played a lot of young players. He has tried to play an attractive style of football. It feels like a lot has come down to poor crossing and a lack of a clear number nine. How much of that is his responsibility? You know, well, clearly the crossing and the tactical side does, but in terms of who he has to pick in that goal scoring position, I'm not sure. I feel like he deserves a bit more slack. As for the broader topic about foreign coaches, I think I'd wrap it up in a bit of what I said last week about Mike Mulvey and the Mariners. Clubs just need longer term perspectives and appreciate that if you're going to get somebody in, like, you know, look at Marcus Babbel at Western Sydney, he's inherited Josip Gombau's squad and Josip Gombau inherited Tony Popovic's squad. So you've gone through two iterations that haven't survived beyond a number of months. You need to give somebody like Babbel or Kurtz a couple of years to acknowledge what, you know, what their methods are and bring their players in, give them time to establish the repetition that's required to convert decent footballers into the kind of players that they need in their teams. And we just don't tend to give coaches that much time. And I think with foreign coaches especially, it's just easier to get rid of them because there may be other issues, cultural, family, language, whatever, that makes them more disposable. There's less of an incentive to invest in them. But I don't think that necessarily means that they should be discounted.
No, I agree with you, Jonathan. And I certainly think that a club needs to give a coach more than just one season, especially, as you say, if they have inherited the problems of the previous coach.
Just to finish on Kurtz as well, quite clearly there's more stuff going on behind the scenes as well, isn't there? So it remains to be seen whether we'll get to learn any more about all of that.
Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us on Evenings on FNR, and we'll talk to you again at the same time next week.
Thank you very much.